sit and close her eyes and use her imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, it's Orson Welles starring in The Third Man with an old Moorish custom. But first, on the lighter side, let's spend some time down in Summerfield with the great Gildersleeve. The Great Gildersleeve was created by Harold Perry while he was working on Fibber McGee and Molly in Chicago. The Great Gildersleeve is thought to be the first radio show based on a supporting character from another program. As the program approached its 10th anniversary, Harold Perry grew tired of the role and eventually dropped it. Into Perry's shoes stepped Willard Waterman, whose interpretation was so much like the original, it was startling. Perry's last program was June 1950, when the program returned from vacation in September of that year. Waterman was Gildersleeve. For its 1954-55 season, the program was a daily 15-minute offering with each episode loosely connected. The show returned to 30 minutes in 1955 and continued on Thursdays until 1958. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Willard Waterman starring as the Great Gildersleeve in Gildy's First Day on the Job. From October of 1942, another classic radio program from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Mar, Jamis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
The Kraft Cheese Company, who also bring you Bing Crosby every Thursday night, present each week at this time, Harold Perry as the Great Gildersleeve, written by John Wheat.
Now let's join our friend, the Great Gildersleeve, who stands this morning on the threshold of a new career. He comes down to breakfast with a spring in his step and a light in his eye, for this is the day of his inauguration as Water Commissioner of Summerfield.
Ready now. Here he comes. And don't forget to bow.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Oh, good morning, slaves. Marjorie, Leroy. Good morning, one and all.
Leroy, pull out the Commissioner's chair for him.
Sure. Right this way, Commissioner.
Thank you, my boy.
Won't you sit down?
No tricks now.
No, sir.
Well, there we are. What's this in front of my place? A nosegay?
For your buttonhole.
Oh, that was sweet of you, my dear. Or did Leroy pick these posies?
Are you kidding?
You better start right in, Uncle Mort. Bertie's making waffles.
Waffles?
Yes, sir. Coming right up.
Oh, Bertie, you're psychic.
Yes, I think I must be. The things that go on.
What things, Bertie?
Well, I dreamt a dream last night, Mr. Gildersleeve, and I sure wish you'd explain it.
What was it, Bertie?
Well, I dreamt there was a globe of the world, and then I saw Mr. Wilkie running around it like mad.
Well, you've been reading the newspapers. Go on.
And then I saw Miss Roosevelt, and she was running around the world, too.
Yeah? Now, what is it you don't understand, Bertie?
Who is trying to catch who?
Oh, Bertie, you're going to
afraid to let the international situation ruin those waffles.
Oh, my goodness.
I spent a very interesting and profitable evening myself last night, children.
How?
Well, to prepare for my new post as water commissioner, I took the encyclopedia to bed with me. And do you know, I found some things in there I never even knew before.
Oh, you probably just forgot them, Unc.
What were you looking up, Uncle Mort?
Water. Do you know, Marjorie, that 3/4 of the Earth's surface is covered with water?
Really? I think you better drink your orange juice, Uncle Mort. The waffles are waiting.
Yes, sir. 3/4 of the Earth's surface, water. What do you think of that?
Too much water.
There's no such thing as too much water. Water is very important. Did you ever stop to think, young man, where Columbus would have been without water?
I don't know. Home and bed, I guess.
He'd have been high and dry, and you and I wouldn't be here today.
You won't get to the office today if you don't stop talking and eat, Commissioner.
Oh, you're right, my dear. Bertie, if those waffles are ready, I am.
Coming right up, Miss Gilfleet.
Water, yes, water is very important. People don't appreciate water.
Here you are, Miss Gilfleet.
Bertie, do you know what James Watt couldn't have invented the steam engine without?
No, sir.
Water.
Is that a fact?
Absolutely.
He's lucky to get him some.
You know what I think, Commissioner? I think you've got water on the brain.
All right, you can laugh, young man, but water is one of the most important things in the world. Now, you take Robert Fulton, invented the steamboat, 1807. Couldn't have done it without water. DeWitt Clinton, Erie Canal, 1825, water. Ponce de Leon, the Fountain of Youth, water. Balboa, the Pacific, water. The Monitor and the Merrimack, water. Bertie, bring me some more water.
Yeah. Uncle Mort, I don't want to change the subject.
Yeah?
But can we have a weenie roast today?
Who's we?
Me and Piggy and the gang. We're going on a hike.
Well, I guess so, if it's all right with Bertie.
Gee, thanks, Unc.
You picked kind of a hot day for a hike, though, didn't you?
Well, we didn't know it was going to be so hot.
You'd never think it was the middle of October, would you?
Well, we usually get one late hot spell, my dear. And by the way, speaking of heat, do you know how many days a camel can go without water?
And speaking of water, Uncle Mort, do you know what time it is?
Oh, my goodness, I got to be going. I can't be late the first day on the job.
Don't forget your flowers, Uncle Mort.
Yeah?
Here. Let me put them in your buttonhole.
Thank you, my dear.
Oh, and your tie's crooked.
It is?
Yes. There. And what about your handkerchief?
They're right in my pocket.
Oh, it should stick out a little.
Now,
you look more like a water commissioner.
Oh, thank you, my dear.
Well, you're all set, I guess. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck, Uncle.
Thank you.
What is it? Have you forgotten something?
No, I was just wondering.
Wondering what?
What on earth does a water commissioner do? Good morning, Mrs. Ransom.
Are you leaving so early?
As a matter of fact, I'm not early. I'm late.
Well, I won't keep you then. I just came over to wish you success.
Oh, thank you.
And to bring you a flower for your buttonhole. Oh, but I see you've already got one. I guess some other gal...
There's always room for one more. Flower, I mean.
Oh. Well, I brought you a bachelor's button because you're such a dyed-in-the-wool bachelor.
Well, I may be dyed-in-the-wool, but I'm not dead yet. Yeah, I gotta go, Leela. I gotta go.
Oh, wait a minute, Throckmorton. Let me put this flower in your buttonhole.
Oh, thank you. Oh, Leela?
Yes, Throckmorton?
Did you know that a cubic foot of water weighs 62.5 pounds?
Oh, hello, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Hello, Petey. I'm in a hurry. Got to get down to the office. I'd like some cigars.
Oh, I guess we can fix you up, Mr. Gildersleeve. You want the usual, I suppose.
Yes, the perfectos. I'll take 3. How have you been?
Well, to tell you the truth, Mr. Gildersleeve...
Not so good, eh? Well, I'll tell you what to do. You want to drink more water.
More water?
Yes. Everybody ought to drink more water. Half the troubles of this world would be eliminated, Peavy, if people drank more water.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that.
It's true. You can take all those medicines you've got there and pour them down the sewer for all the good they'll do. Water, that's the thing. You ought to drink 10 or 12 glasses of it every day.
Well, no, that's a lot of water.
Best thing in the world for you. I'll tell you something, Peavy. Do you know that the human body is 90% water?
Is that a fact?
Absolutely. 90% water.
Well, then I don't see why we should drink any more.
I haven't got time to argue with you, Peavy. Those are the facts. You can take them or leave them. How much is that? 30 cents?
And one is 31. Have you got a penny?
That darn penny. No, I haven't.
I don't want to leave you with the impression that I have anything against water, Mr. Gildersleeve. I usually takes some with every meal. So does Mrs. Peavy.
It's all right, all right. Give me my change. I'm late now.
You understand. It's just that I believe in moderation.
Peavy, you'll die of moderation.
Well, now, I wouldn't...
Goodbye, Peavy.
Goodbye, Mr.
Pardon me. Could you tell me where the office of the water department is?
Right down the hall. You see where that fellow's painting the name on the door?
Oh, yes. Much obliged. Oh, and it's my name, too. Name on the door and everything. Water Department, Throckmorton P. Gilder.
Talking to me, son?
No. I was just admiring your work.
Well, it ain't art, maybe, but it's a living, sort of.
Yes, just one thing. I'm afraid you made a slight error.
Maybe you could do it better.
No. I have no fault to find with your technique. It's the spelling. There's another E in Gildersleeve.
But don't tell me. This is the way she gave it to me.
But I haven't...
This is the way she gave it to me. I've got it on a piece of paper.
I got it on a piece of paper, too. My birth certificate.
I don't know about that, son. This is the way she spelled it. If you got any complaints, you'll have to take it up with her.
Her? Who's her?
Oh, hatchet face inside. Boy, I've met some bossy dames in my time. Even married one. That old battle axe takes the marbles.
We'll soon see who's running this department. Can I get through here?
Don't smear it now.
Miss, madam.
I'll be with you in just a moment.
Oh, excuse me.
You'll find an application form there on the counter. Just fill it out.
But I don't want to...
I'm sorry, that's the rule. No service without an application.
You don't understand. My name is...
Name on the first line, please. Last name first, then first name and middle initial.
Look, is this the water department?
That's right. There'll be a deposit of $2, which will be deducted from your first month's bill.
My dear woman, do you see this door? Oh!
Now you went and spoiled it.
Sorry. You see that name? Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve? That's me.
Oh, won't you come in, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Thank you.
If you'll follow me, I'll show you to your office.
Well, nice little layout here. Small, but cozy.
I beg your pardon?
I said it was cozy.
Oh.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Miss Fitch.
Oh, how do you do, Miss Fitch?
I've been 33 years with the water department and never missed a day.
That's a shame. I think you ought to get a day off.
May I assure you of my every cooperation? If there's anything you want, please ring for me. I've cleared out the desk. You'll find a coat closet wash basin in there. The phone works on a buzzer. I go to lunch at 12:30.
Oh, Miss Fitch, just a moment.
Yes?
Who's the old geezer in the picture there?
He was Summerfield's first water commissioner.
Oh. Funny-looking old coot, wasn't he?
He happened to be my father.
You. I'm sorry. The picture probably didn't do him justice.
Well, it wasn't all that it might have been.
Miss Fitch?
Yes?
Don't leave me alone in here.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
I'm new here. I don't know the first thing about this. What do I do?
Do?
Yes. Now that I'm commissioner, shouldn't I be doing something?
Mr. Clanahan never did. He always left things to me.
I always suspected Clanahan of that.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gildersleeve. If my services are not satisfactory, I should be glad to tender my resignation.
Oh, no, I didn't mean that. You're perfectly satisfactory, Miss Fitch. You're wonderful. It's just that, if I'm commissioner, I think I ought to be doing something. Going over the bills or something.
Well, it's never been handled that way. But if you insist, I've been getting up a list of the delinquents.
Delinquents? You mean people who haven't paid their bills?
Yes.
Oh, let's have a look at that. That ought to be fun.
I'll bring it in.
Thank you.
Where is he? Where's Gildersleeve?
Just a moment, please. Did you wish to see someone?
Yes, and there he is. Gildersleeve.
Hello, Judge. How did you get in?
I walked in. Gildersleeve, I want an explanation.
Judge, you've come to the right place. What do you want explained? We explain anything.
I want to know why my water was turned off.
Oh, well, we'll have to look into this. Water turned off, eh?
You know darn well it was turned off.
I'll have to take this up with our Miss Fitch. I'll ring for her. Sit down.
I don't want to sit down.
All right, stand up.
I don't want to stand up. You don't have to put on this act with me, Throckmorton. I know what's back of this. It's spite, pure and simple.
Now, Judge, there isn't an ounce of spite in my whole nature, and you know it.
Yeah, you're just like every other small-time politician. The minute you get a little authority, you start making a petty nuisance of yourself. I'll tell you what's wrong with you, Gildersleeve. You're drunk with power.
Did you want me, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Oh, yes, Miss Fitch. Have you that list of people who haven't paid their bills?
Yes, right here.
You're sure you're not just a teensy bit delinquent, Judge?
Are you accusing me of not paying my bills, Gildersleeve? Such a thing as libel, remember?
I'm not accusing you of anything, Judge. Let's look at the record.
Of course, there might have been some mistake.
Not with our Miss Fitch.
I mean, it might have slipped my mind.
Oh, starting to crawl, eh? Let's see. E, F, G. Oh, here are the H's. And lo, Judge Hooker's name led all the rest. With $11.86. Is that right, Miss Fitch?
That's right, Mr. Gildersleeve. And Mr. Clanahan's last instructions were to stop service on all unpaid bills.
Oh, Clanahan. That explains it.
No, Judge. The $11.86 explains it.
Well, get somebody over there and have the water turned on right away, will you?
Glad to, Judge, the minute you pay up.
As a matter of fact, Gildy, I haven't got the cash on me. It's Saturday. The bank's closed. Tell you what I'll do. I'll put a check in the mail Monday.
Good. We'll be glad to resume service as soon as we receive it.
You mean you're going to let me go without water all weekend?
Sorry, Judge. It's got to be on the line.
But you know my credit's good, Gildy. It was an oversight.
I'm sorry, Judge, but this is a public office, and I propose to discharge it without fear or favor, especially where you're concerned.
All right, Gildy. I won't forget this. The man is drunk with power.
The old goat. I guess that'll teach him a lesson.
Did you mean what you said, Mr. Gildersleeve, about no favors for anyone?
Of course I meant it, absolutely. They don't pay up, shut off their water. Why?
Because, well, have you looked at that list under the G's?
Under the G's? Under the G's. Oh, my goodness, Gildersleeve.
The Great Gildersleeve will be with us again in a few seconds.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now let's get back to the Great Gildersleeve. After a light lunch at the Idle Hour tea shop, he returns to the town hall ready to pitch in for a good afternoon's work.
Well, don't you take Saturday afternoons off, Miss Fitch?
Not when there's work to be done.
That's the spirit I like to see. By George, I think you and I are going to get along.
I'm glad you think so.
You know, I was thinking during lunch, Miss Fitch, there's a lot of changes that ought to be made around here.
They seem to have been started already.
What do you mean?
There are some people in your office.
People?
Women.
Women?
Two of them.
Two?
They walked right in. They said they knew you.
Well, I can't imagine. I don't know any women, do I?
How about putting the desk over here?
Well, how about Kitty Connor facing the dog?
What is this?
Let's try it. Oh, Uncle Mort, help us move the desk, will you?
Yes, you're so strong. We could hardly budge.
Wait a minute. What's going on here?
We're going to fix up your office for you, Uncle Mort. We've got it all planned.
Yes, it needs a woman's touch, Throckmorton. It really does. Now, you take that portrait there.
Yips.
That's simply got to go. I mean, it's too ridiculous.
Be quiet. It's her father out there. No, my dear, if that portrait goes, I go. I'm not kidding. She'd throw me right out.
Behind the desk, Uncle Mort, so we can see how you look in the corner.
Look, I've got work to do here.
Oh, it won't take a minute, Throckmorton. Come on now. That's a good boy.
Yeah.
Oh, I think he looks wonderful in the corner. Don't you, Marjorie?
Yes, he does.
I think we ought to let him stay there. And now climb up on the desk, will you, Throckmorton, and hold this material up beside the window.
Now, really, I've got work.
Oh, now, it won't take but a jiffy. Marjorie and I shopped for this chintz all over town, didn't we, honey?
That's right.
Oh, I think it's just the smartest thing. Now, climb up. That's right. And hold it up high.
Is this high enough? Yes, Miss Fitch.
Mr. Powers of the Indicator Vindicator to see you.
Oh, my goodness. He probably wants to interview me. Let me get down off of here. Let me down off of here.
Let me give you a hand, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, hello, Mr. Powers.
Doing a little fancy work?
Yeah. Upsy-daisy. Mr. Powers, you know Nargery, my niece.
Yes, indeed, yes.
And Mrs. Ransom.
Well, Well, how do you do, Mrs. Ransom?
How do you do? Oh, I think newspapers are so fascinating, Mr. Powers. I've been intending to subscribe to your publication right along.
Well, always glad to welcome a new subscriber.
Yeah.
Oh, but somehow every time the boy comes round, seems like I haven't got my handbag with me.
So. Well, I'm sorry you have to be going, ladies.
Yes, we really must.
Oh, must we?
Miss Fitch will show you out, won't you?
Gladly.
Goodbye. Goodbye. That's a great girl, that niece of yours, Mr. Gildersleeve. She's got a lot of stuff on the ball.
Yeah, she's a fine girl, Marjorie.
Who's the,
Oh, she's a friend of the family.
Oh, I see. A friend of the family.
Yes, neighbor of ours.
Neighbor.
Right next door.
Well, I'll tell you what I dropped around for, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Cigar?
No, thanks.
You don't mind if I...
Oh, of course not. Go ahead. Here's a match.
Thank you. I suppose you want an interview.
Well, I...
Well, you've heard the old saying, Mr. Powers, a new broom sweeps clean. I propose to get rid of all the deadwood and inefficiency here and run this department without fear or favor for anybody.
That's fine, Mr. Gildersleeve. I'm glad to hear that. But I came over here with something else in mind.
Oh, what's that?
Has it ever occurred to you, Mr. Gildersleeve, that the reservoir of this town offers a beautiful opportunity for sabotage?
Sabotage? By George, I never thought of that.
The state highway goes right by there, you know.
Why, it'd be the easiest thing in the world to heave a dead cat out of a car or something.
You bet it would. Yes, sir. I've been trying to get something done about guarding it.
You know, only the other day, a man passed me on the street with a very suspicious face. It was about 5:30. I was coming home to dinner. And I don't know. He just looks suspicious, that's all.
Is that so? Well, I finally got Charlie Gates interested.
Charlie Gates?
The chief of police.
Oh.
He's coming out to the reservoir with him this afternoon to look over the ground, and I thought if you weren't too busy, maybe you'd like to come along.
I'll get my hat and be right with you. Miss Fitch, if anybody asks for me, I'll be out at the reservoir.
Very well.
On second thought, if anybody asks, don't tell them. It's a military secret. You see how easy it would be, Chief. Up around the next bend here, the road isn't 20 feet from the reservoir.
I know that. You don't have to tell me that. Just a question of man. I haven't got the force to do it.
Well, maybe we ought to call for volunteers then. You know, like fire watchers.
Yeah, water watchers.
Wait a minute. Stop the car.
Huh?
Why, what's up?
There's somebody down there right now.
What? Well, he's right. Four or five of them. Right down to the walk.
In the reservoir? Where? I can't see them.
Hey, where are you? Don't move. I got you surrounded.
Don't get him, Chief. I'll stay here and guard the car.
They're running for it. You'll never catch them.
Huh?
Uh-oh, one of them jumped in the water.
Drag him out of there, Chief. Drag him out.
He's got him.
Can you imagine that? Polluting the reservoir. He ought to get 10 years for that.
He certainly should.
I'm going to see that there's a penalty for this if there isn't one already.
Say, it's only a kid.
Huh?
And he's naked. But they're all kids. I bet they've been swimming.
Swimming?
Yes.
Leroy!
Hey, I'll tell this big lug to lay off me.
Get your clothes on, young man.
Uncle Mort, you think they'll put me in jail? Will they, huh? Will they?
You're in jail, young man. This is the police station. This is what is known as the clink.
I know, but will they lock me up?
I can't say. The chief himself doesn't know yet. He's gone to look up the law. But you deserve to be locked up.
Oh, gee, it wasn't my fault, Unc. They dared me to, the other kids. They said I was scared.
That's no excuse, and you know it.
Yeah, I know it.
People drink that water. Do you realize that? Do you?
Yeah.
Why'd you do it, then?
Guess I just didn't think.
I guess you didn't. You ought to know better than to go into the water at this time of the year anyway. It's a wonder you didn't freeze.
I did. That's why they dared me.
Well, dare or no dare, young man, this is a very serious offense. It's terrible. I just don't see how you could do such a thing to me. My first day in office, too. What'll people think? My own nephew. What'll the newspaper say?
Sorry, Uncle. I don't know why I did it. I guess I'm just no good.
Oh, now, Leroy.
They ought to lock me up. They ought to... They can't give me the chair.
No, Leroy, it's not a capital offense. But it's pretty bad. particularly in wartime.
You mean they might stand me up and...
Now, calm down, young man. Calm down.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to hold him for the juvenile court, Mr. Gildersleeve. The penalty for that seems to be $25 fine, 30 days in jail, or both.
Both?
That's ridiculous. After all, it was nothing but a boyish prank.
Yeah, that's all it was, a boyish prank.
Be quiet, Leroy. Quiet.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gildersleeve. I don't make the laws here. I just carry them out.
Of course. You're quite right, Gates. Well, when is the juvenile court open?
Well, as a matter of fact, we haven't any juvenile court. Judge Hooker hears the juvenile cases, and he doesn't sit till Monday.
Judge Hooker? Well, yeah, I know him well.
Sure. We know him well.
Quiet, Leroy. Judge Hooker is one of my best friends, Chief. I'll get him right down here. May I use your telephone?
Right there on the desk.
Thank you. Judge Hooker, the old goat. I'll get this thing straightened out right away.
Yeah.
Hello, Judge. This is Gildy, your little chum. How you been? How's your golf game? Say, I'll bet you're shooting down those low 70s now, you old son of a gun. Yeah. Judge, by the way, before I forget, we're in a little trouble down here. I wonder if you could run down for a minute at the police station. And no, no, it's nothing at all, just a little boyish prank. But, Judge, have a heart. You wouldn't let him hold him here all weekend. No, no, it's Leroy, not me. Thanks, Judge. I object. The court is prejudiced.
Quiet.
Turning off the court's water has nothing whatever to do with this case.
Nothing has been said about turning off the court's water.
No, but I know what you're thinking. And let me say this, Judge. I propose to conduct my office without fear or favor. I ask no favors, and I give none.
Hey, I'll take it easy.
Be quiet. I shall be pleased to have the court's water turned on. Again, as soon as the court pays the $11.86 it owes, and not before.
Is the gentleman quite through?
Quite.
I should like to point out in the first place that the court is not on trial here. Young man, you plead guilty, do you not?
Yes, Judge. I mean, Your Honor.
The evidence is quite clear. In this case, as in so many others that come before this court, the fault lies not at the door of this innocent minor, but with those entrusted with his upbringing.
Why, you...
Quiet. It's hardly to be expected that a child of his tender years, brought up in such a deplorable environment, would escape entirely unscathed.
Oh, you old goat, that's libel.
Quiet.
Yes.
You, the circumstances, young man... Fine you $25 in costs.
What?
However, I will suspend the sentence on the fine.
Well, that's big of you, Judge.
But not on the costs.
It costs? What's that?
My time and inconvenience in coming down here.
What does that amount to?
Exactly $11.86. Take it and turn on my water.
Oh! Dear Diary, I'm going to have to do something about Leroy. I've noticed that he's been getting awfully fresh lately. But today he broke the law. I wonder if maybe Judge Hooker was right. Perhaps I haven't spent enough time with the boy. Perhaps I ought to get to know him better. There's only one thing. If I knew him any better, could I stand him at all? Good night, everybody.
The music heard on this program was composed and conducted by Billy Mills.
This is Frank Bingman speaking for the Kraft Cheese Company and inviting you to tune in again next week for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve.
From October of 1942, it's been Harold Perry starring as the Great Gildersleeve and Gildy's first day on the job. In a moment, Orson Welles as the third man, as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
The third man was the story of radio's all-time Prince of Knaves, Harry Lime, a character created by Graham Greene in his novel of intrigue. Orson Welles had always seemed somewhat mischievous ever since that long-ago night when his men from Mars landed in the Jersey Flats, so he was the perfect choice as the voice of Harry Lime. Welles did about a year's worth of Lime shows, coming off as a double-dealing, conniving, covetous money-grabber, but somehow managing to make the character likable, even at times admirable, in his deceptions. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Orson Welles starring as the third man in An Old Moorish Custom from December of 1951. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Presenting Orson Welles as the third man. The Lives of Harry Lime, the fabulous stories of the immortal character originally created in the motion picture The Third Man, with zither music by Anton Kara.
This is a love story. Well, don't worry, there's action in it. Arab chieftains, international gangsters, and a buried treasure. But essentially, this is a tale about one of the times I fell in love. Now, don't laugh. I'm not the first man that happened to. Or the third man, either.
And now, Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the third man in An Old Moorish Custom.
Valerie Darouche, that was her name. She lived in North Africa, claimed descent from one of the old Barbary pirates, and looked like the direct and miraculous offspring of a couple of the more personable Greek gods. Maybe she was at that. But her official grandfather was old Armand Darouche, owner of an ancient fortified estate a couple of hundred kilometers inland from Algiers. I'd heard stories about him, of his great wealth, and what was more important, its strange source. So the first thing I did when I got into town was to wangle an invitation for a gala at the governor's mansion. I knew Mademoiselle Darouche would be there. She was. I figured one thing would lead to another, and it did. 4 weeks and 7 meetings later, Valerie and I were dancing together at our rendezvous in the ballroom of the luxurious Granada Hotel, overlooking the Mediterranean.
Harry, you dance so wonderfully. I float.
Honey, dancing with you is like coming in with a tide.
Oh, you are a poet, Harry. Oh, Chérie, not so close, please. Madame Plantage, she is watching.
Yes, Madame Plantage. Did we have to bring her along?
But certainly. I could not travel to this city alone, not even for a visit merely to the shops.
You've got plenty of protection without her, it seems to me. That giant Sudanese of yours and the red fez and the baggy pants.
Oh, but Ali is only my chauffeur. This is not your America, Chérie. Here, the chaperone is also necessary for the unmarried girl of good family.
Yeah. Well, let's go out in the balcony and watch the sun go down. We haven't had a chance to be alone. Not once since we met.
But certainly, if you visit Barbarossa again, Harry, perhaps I could arrange for Madame Plantage to occupy herself.
And your grandfather, the seigneur?
Perhaps it will be a day when he is out to inspect the flocks. Or what is left of them.
Those flocks of sheep. There's hobby. Is that the idea?
Hobby?
Well, I don't know. It seems difficult somehow to think of your aristocratic old grandfather as a farmer.
But, Shuri, he is much more. At Barbarossa, he is king. He is emperor.
Well, it certainly looks the part. He might be the very incarnation of that old Barbary Corsair who founded your family, Arouge Barbarossa. It's
called. Oh, you know about us, Harry?
Oh, sure, honey. I read up on it. Arouge was the greatest of the Moorish pirates, huh?
He was no more, but the Greek turned Muslim.
Where?
His beard was red like the blood on his hands. So after 450 years, an ancestor who was cursed by God and man becomes a romantic figure. Droll, no? Oh, Harry.
Yes?
What are you thinking?
Well, I was thinking how perfectly beautiful you are and how much I love you.
Oh, Harry, if you only make bouquets with words. No, no, don't.
That is more than a verbal posy, darling.
Oh, no, no, Sherry. No, no, don't embrace me.
But if you love me...
Please, it will not be easy.
What do you mean?
My grandpère, the senor, I owe him too much. He and I, we are the last of the Darouge.
Yes, I know this.
He has plans for me to live in Paris for a while, a term at the Sorbonne, a season in Rome, in Athens,
and... Well, we can do all that now, on a long, wonderful honeymoon.
But I can't disregard him. Since my parents are dead, I am all he has left.
But if I spoke to him, wouldn't he think of your happiness, of his consent?
I don't know.
Supposing I drive up to Barbarossa tomorrow and ask him.
Well, he will ask questions, foolish ones, you may think.
Such as?
Such as, who is your family? What are your politics?
Oh, no need to worry, honey. I'm like a pair of socks, neither right nor left.
Oh, my dear, do not joke with grandpère. For him, it is most serious.
Yes, I know. But you will back me up, won't you?
Yes.
Mademoiselle.
Oh, yes, I...
Ah, you're Jeannie. Did you rub a lamp or something?
Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Madame Plantage a dit qu'il faut partir maintenant.
Oui, je viens tout de suite. I must go, darling.
I left the hotel and threaded my way through the streets toward the little apartment in the European quarter that I'd rented when I first arrived. The twilight was sowing stars in the sky. And I heard footsteps overtaking me and looked down at the stout, pink-cheeked little man in a baggy alpaca suit and fuzzy fedora. He kept pace, looking up at me with glossy, inquisitive eyes.
Monsieur Lyme.
Yes?
Permit me to introduce myself.
He drew a wallet from his pocket and flipped it open. The identity card beneath its plastic shield stared up at me. Pierre-Jules Charron, police detective.
You remain in Algiers much longer.
A week or so, perhaps. Why?
The length of your stay is a compliment to our city, monsieur.
Oh. Well, I've always felt that you can't really know a place unless you live there for a while.
True, but when you stopped over in Palermo, monsieur...
Palermo?
Yes, just before sailing for Algiers. Did you meet there one calling himself Pierre Dubois?
Dubois?
Only his name is not Dubois, monsieur. It is Mario Marteau.
Oh? What's he done?
Many things, monsieur, including murder. He fled Algiers some time ago. His trail was picked up at Palermo.
But would he be likely to return to Algiers?
Evidently he has. A British art dealer has identified his picture as one of several bandits who tortured and robbed him last week.
Oh, I see.
A dangerous man, monsieur.
Yes, I would like that.
We think perhaps he is a lieutenant of El Siquina.
Who?
El Siquina, a Bedouin outlaw. One of our local gangster leaders. If it occurs that you see Mario Marteau again...
I'll give you a ring, you can be sure.
A ring?
On the telephone.
Oh. Of course, of course. Merci, monsieur.
Merci. So I all waddled away into the gathering twilight. How many pieces of my past did he dug up? A forged passport? Did he check it with a pair of sûreté? But no, it's not. He'd have picked me up for sure if he had. Or was this another one of those cat and mouse games? Couldn't tell. Went on to my apartment. When I got there and put my key in the lock, it refused to turn. The door was already unlocked.
Come on in, Ami. Do not just stand there and stare.
Mario. What are you doing here?
El Siquina's treasury is getting low. It was necessary to get money at once.
Oh.
He is getting impatient with you, Harry.
Impatient? You know, just stopped me on the street, a police agent, asking questions about you.
Mm. Tell me something new.
Well, perhaps I will. That legend you told me in Palermo, you know, about Arouge Barbarossa bearing a billion francs worth of gold cups and things like that.
It is no legend.
Maybe not. Anyway, I did some research in the government library.
So?
Arouge Barbarossa actually captured a galleon back in 1504, which the Pope had sent from Genoa loaded with gold dust and wine for the use of the church. He was pursued by warships and hid his loot in a cave on the coast somewhere between Algiers and Bougie. There used to be a legend that Arouge and his crew returned to the cave once every year, rising from hell, you know, to celebrate their capture and toast their loot and sacramental wine. Huh?
Wine, eh?
Yes, an old Moorish custom, no doubt.
The Quran does not permit Muslims to drink, my friend.
Arouge was a Greek variety. His corsairs wrote their own Quran.
I am not interested in fairy tales.
Well, neither am I, Mario. According to the records, the galleon Arouge captured was loaded with newly mined gold dust for the goldsmiths of Civitavecchia. There's no mention of finished gold articles.
I do not care a sou what the records say. All I know is what I see now. Old Armand Arouche this past year has sold numerous antiques of pure gold to dealers. The Englishman we robbed had a 16th century cup he bought from Darouche just 2 weeks ago.
Okay, you just leave it to me. I'll find out soon enough just where the stuff is hidden.
Good. You have just 24 hours.
What?
If you still have not secured the necessary information, El Sikina will take steps to obtain it himself.
Meaning just what?
Meaning he may have to visit Barbarossa personally.
I see.
And as for you, Harry, your services will be dispensed with permanently. I am sure you understand.
Yes, I think I understand. The sun was high when I woke up the next morning. I dressed carefully, hired a limousine, an expensive-looking one, and drove out from Algiers toward the ancient estate of Barbarossa. I pulled up before the villa of Signor Armand Darouche. It was broad and sprawling. There were narrow embrasures for windows. The old house was like a lonely fortress in the blazing heat. I'd expected Valerie to meet me at the door, but instead, a silent Arab servant bowed me in.
Monsieur Lime, please come in.
Ah, Monsieur Darouche. It's very good to find you at home, sir. I was hoping to speak to you. Your granddaughter and I, Signor.
But of course, your charming campaign to win her hand. Did you imagine I would not wonder who you are? That I would not take the trouble to find out?
Find out what? I told you all
you
about
did,
it.
And an excellent story it was. But the police this morning have told a story that is quite different.
Police?
Your record, monsieur. Algeria does not welcome such as you.
Ali!
A door opened, the other end of the room, and the giant Sudanese stepped in, red fez, baggy pants and all. This time, however, something new had been added, a gay bandolier of cartridges and a rifle whose black muzzle stared at me as the old man pocketed his automatic and turned to a telephone on a nearby table.
I will arrange for you a police escort back to Algiers, monsieur. Hello? Hello? L'appareil ne fonctionne pas. The telephone service will no doubt improve itself later. In the meantime, Ali will convey you to a guest room suitable for you.
Listen, if I've made any mistakes in the past, it's well, after all, none of us are perfect. But I do love your granddaughter, monsieur, and I have information of the utmost importance for you. I didn't want to alarm her, but I've uncovered a plot.
A plot?
It's true. I swear it's true. El Sikina thinks you've discovered a great treasure buried by Arouge Barbarossa.
What?
It's fantastic, of course, but...
Jackal, so that is your game.
Now, wait.
A spy for a Bedouin gangster coming to my home, making love to my granddaughter.
No, listen to me. For your sake, El Sikina is no friend of mine. He may raid Barbarossa this very night.
Ah, what tale is this? You expect me to believe
you? Well, you'd better believe me.
If it were the truth, which I doubt, why should you warn me? What do you expect to get out of this?
Your friendship.
My friendship.
Plus, monsieur, naturally, there's a plus. Plus a nominal percentage of the loot left by your illustrious ancestor.
Ali, je perds patience. Take him out before I kill.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now Orson Welles, as the third man, continues with An Old Moorish Custom.
Well, The guest room in which Ali locked me featured primarily an iron door, naked stone walls, and a single barred window. The hours pass. The shadows lengthen. And nothing whatever happened except that I got thirsty. Was the old devil going to keep me here until I died from thirst? Surely he'd gotten his blasted call through to Algiers by now. The police should have been here long ago. Of course, if he hadn't, if the telephone line was still out, then I knew, of course. El Tequina. He and his raiders, they cut it preparing the attack. They'd stormed the gate, killed the guards, and now here they came. Bullets came through my window, ricocheting from wall to wall. Sooner or later, I knew, one would make a billiard shot that would knock me into a side pocket. But finally, the firing slackened and grew still.
Harry!
Valerie!
You warned Grandfather, but he did not believe you. You said you loved me.
And you thought that was a lie, too, huh?
After what the police told about you, what else could I think? But if you are not lying about your love...
Valerie, you know I wasn't.
Then take this rifle, Harry. Help us defend the house. Well, what is so funny?
You're asking me to prove my love by getting myself killed. Okay, honey, give me the gun. If I'm taken alive, I'm finished anyway. We picked our way through the darkened rooms and corridors, stepping over dead bodies. The big Sudanese lay half-crouched beside an embrasure. He whirled as we entered.
No, Ali, tout va bien.
Better point that rifle the other way, lad. I'm on your side. Valerie, are you two all who are left?
No, my grandfather. He's on guard by a window on the other side of the house. But he is wounded. This way.
Armand Durouche lay in the darkness beside a low embrasure. He turned on his side to look at us as we came in. Dim moonlight revealed his shirt front. Dark with blood.
Monsieur Leib, I have taken the desperate choice. I have no other. If you love my granddaughter, you will aid to obtain her safety.
How?
I have here... can you reach it? On the floor.
This?
Oui. Parchment. Very old.
Just what is it?
A map. I took it from its hiding place a little while ago to burn it. There beside you on the floor is a small piece of candle. Light it.
There.
The map of the treasure, armed of a tale for children.
Then it's true.
Wait. The smaller part remains where it has been for over 400 years with the curse of God upon it. If you love Valerie, you can buy her life with it and yours. You are clever, Leib. You can bargain with El Tequina. Save Valerie from those swine.
These symbols, I don't understand.
I will tell you their meaning. First, swear on your salvation that you will keep faith.
I swear.
Now listen. Bend closer. I will show you how to find the cave of the Corsair. Here is the key to the court.
When Darouche had finished, I put the parchment in my pocket, stuffed the candle, tried to make the old man a little more comfortable, but his body had gone limp. When I spoke, there wasn't any answer. The master of Barbarossa was dead. Here they come. Valerie! Valerie, are you hit?
Ali is wounded.
Oh, Valerie, it's no use.
Oh, Harry!
Mario! Mario, do you hear me? Tell your boss to stop shooting. I've got everything under control.
Harry!
Mario! Mario, it's all right. I've disarmed him. You can... Move!
The big Sudanese was dying as he brought his rifle butt against the back of my skull, but all the same, it was a blow that knocked me colder than a witch's kiss. When I came to, the brightness of day hurt my eyes. I closed them again, quick. The world was rocking underneath me. It took a minute or two to realize that I was tied hand and foot, draped across the back of a camel. The smell of salt air was mixed with the smell of camel, and I saw the dark blue of the Mediterranean curving to the left. The Bedouins halted and dismounted. My wrists and ankles were unbound, and I was led to the head of the column. Mario Marteau stood there, and beside him was Valerie Darouche.
Good morning, Harry.
Did you sleep well?
Mario, why have I been tied up? I kept my part of the bargain, didn't I?
Did you?
Old Darouche was holding me prisoner when you attacked. I broke out and forced him to give me the chart showing where the treasure of Barbarossa is hidden. I have it here in my pocket.
Well,
it's gone. You have it.
Of course.
Well, I didn't fail, did I?
And I once thought you were a man, but I loved you. Animal.
Valerie. Mario, those men over there, what are they digging?
A hole for you, Harry.
But why? Why? Where's El Tequina? Where is he? Bring me to him.
And you are supposed to be so clever.
Of course. I should have guessed a long time ago. You are El Tequina.
Who else?
May you both burn in torment.
All in good time, mademoiselle. First, there is the matter of the directions. A code, mademoiselle.
I told you I do not know, and if I did, I'd die before I tell you.
Mario, I know.
You?
I'll tell you for a price.
Price?
Set Mademoiselle Darouche and myself free in Algiers. That's not much to ask.
No. If this is not one of your little
it's
tricks...
It's no trick.
I will set you both free after we find the treasures, not before.
Okay. Now, give me the map. We followed the broken coastline, and later that day, as the sky grew gray and dust devils danced, we reached the place. An old Bedouin remained with Valerie on the beach as I led them into a narrow break in the rocks, a break that widened into an enormous cavern. Their flashlight beams danced about and picked out a number of copper chests, green with age and corrosion. No doubt about it, we'd found it. It's the cave of the Corsairs.
Oh, shoot! Empty!
Darouche must have taken most of it, but here's one chest, Mario, filled to the top. Look. Look, it's gold dust. 100 million francs worth, at least. It's been left here to escape the tax collector.
The rest of it.
Well, sold, spent, of course. Oh, they've
found something.
Yes, evidently. Oh, it's wine, Mario. Look, sacramental wine in sealed flagons. Wine taken off the galley, hidden over 400 years ago. Well, Mario, I've kept my word, haven't I? Don't you think I should get a small chair?
Up, down! Ahmed, take this dog out! Stand guard over him and the woman!
We huddled on the beach in the lee of a sheltering rock, Valerie, our guards, and I. The mounting surf crashed on the narrow beach. The sky sagged like a wet circus tent. And two of the guards stared enviously at the revelry in and about the cave. The third, more devout, scowled.
Keep away.
What's wrong, old girl? You're shivering.
Do not touch me.
Two of our guards are leaving, headed for the cave. The others staggering around, lying about the sand. They all drink enough. What the devil? A chest of gold dust. The only one that's left. Those poor scoundrels are taking it out.
What do you think they would do? Leave it there?
But they're reeling. They don't know where they're going. Hey, guard! Chidi! Those men with the chest! They're too near the breakers. They're drunk. Call Mario. Where is he? Get them back.
Come on.
Mario, that's mine. Hey, Mario.
You're 30 pieces of gold.
Whoa.
Take it by the sea. There's a chest. Judas Iscariot. Rolling over and over in the breakers. Yellow dust swallowed up.
Easy, easy, honey. Here comes Mario.
You lie. Feet are shattered.
Mario, no. What's the matter? Don't shoot me. Don't shoot me.
I should know. It would be a trick. I kill.
Mario Marto collapsed, his pistol falling from his hand as he fell. Look at them. All of them. The whole gang flying around. Incredible.
What are you going to do?
Take you back to Algiers with me?
Then let's go. Those Simons sleep forever.
Relax, sweetheart. They will.
What?
They will. Your grandfather put that wine there himself. He told me so before he died.
What do you mean?
It was for the refreshment of all who might come upon the treasure in his absence. It's a fine old vintage, dear. Laced with poison.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio.
where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now, Harry Lime. Whatever happened to Valerie? I'm sure you're asking that question. Well, so am I. Come to think of it, I saved her life, and all she had to say to that was goodbye. Well, so long for now. And remember, if you don't want to work for your living, don't bother about buried treasure. You may have to dig for it.
From December of 1951, it's been Orson Welles starring as the third man in An Old Moorish Custom. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week at the same time and invite a friend to listen to enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
The preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.
SSRDB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.